Now to look at the overall employment numbers and the future of employment for African Americans, we're joined by economist and author Julianne Malveaux. Many of you know her as a regular participant on our roundtable to this program. Welcome, Julianne. Appreciate it.
Hey, Ed. How you doing?
Good, thanks. Let's talk about this in the bigger picture. We took a look, a microcosm look, if you will, of the Gulf region. But when we talk employment numbers for African Americans across this country, they still pale in comparison to the numbers that are being touted in terms of general numbers.
Absolutely. The 10.6% that was reported on December 2nd in terms of the November unemployment rate was more than twice white rate. One of the alarming things was the spike in the African-American women's unemployment rate. The African-American male unemployment rate has always been high, but African-American women have not often seen that spike. And so we know that this is an overall problem. And I've been looking at the ways that the mainstream economic prognosticators have talked about our economy, and they're just about gleeful. Because growth rates are high, they're higher than expected, because unemployment rates have remained steady at 5%. But in all their conversations, there are three things that tend to be missing. One is the whole Katrina issue, as you just addressed in the previous segment, and the people from Katrina who have been displaced, and not only displaced physically, but also employment-wise. Second, people have not looked at the economic and employment consequences of what's been happening in Iraq. We've spent to date over $270 billion. That has generated jobs, but not in sectors where you would necessarily find African Americans employed. And thirdly, where you do find African American employment and often anchors for the African American middle class in industries, especially auto. You've been seeing signs of layoff, announcements of layoff in the tens of thousands. And so while these folks are talking about what I call it macroeconomic ecstasy, what the African-American community has been experiencing is microeconomic angst.
So what does that mean for the community on a whole? Do we see ourselves to a great degree on the economic front as an invisible community? I mean, you suggest that traditional economic indicators are good. The White House will tell you in November 215,000 jobs were added to the rolls. Yet in some cities, we see for black men specifically unemployment as high as 50% in many urban areas.
Absolutely. And for black youth. Well, let me focus on that 215,000 number for a moment as well. The Economic Policy Institute has indicated, based on some projections that the Bush administration made 2 years ago when they began their tax-cutting cycle, that in order to justify the tax cuts, we had to be able to create at least 300,000 jobs a month. Last month, we created 215,000, and that was the best performance that we'd seen in quite a while. In several months in 2004, I might note near election months, we also got close to 300,000, but never there. So we, although the economy seems to be performing, what we need to look at is the people who have dropped out of the labor force, and that's where you'll find those African-American men that you've mentioned. In New York City, black male not employed, which would not be technically called unemployment, rate of over 50%, and several other inner cities, Detroit among them, rates that high. When you begin to look at black youth as well, the non-college-bound youth, you're getting numbers that are Depression-era numbers that policymakers refuse to deal with. They prefer to deal with the macroeconomic big picture. So that 215,000 number, quite frankly, has been celebrated, but is nothing to celebrate if the benchmark is 300,000.
Let me ask you this. When you hear from President Bush, we're not going to rest until every American who wants a job can find one. He said that in a recent speech. And you look at the indicators that you've already alluded to in terms of the market base, particularly for, quote, unskilled workers. What does that mean? Is that more rhetoric than reality?
Oh, it's utter rhetoric. We have not at all done even the small amount, and I would emphasize small amount, that was done in the Clinton years around bringing peripheral people into the workforce. There has been very, and in fact, we've cut education, Ed, to the point that one of the bridges that people thought if you go back to Humphrey Hawkins, you go back, now we're going back a generation or so, but the community college would have been the place where a displaced worker would retool themselves. So you used to be an auto worker, and now you're going to be something else. Where do you learn those skills? Well, community colleges have been cut. So educational institutions are being cut at a time when the American workforce that is non-college educated desperately needs retooling. In addition, the college-educated workforce, quite frankly, is not also having the kind of success that it would like to have. You've got about a third of all Americans who are doing uncommonly well. And at the top 10%, people who are making good money, getting return on investment. But the majority of Americans are finding their wages relatively stagnant. They're not holding up with price increases. If I were to go back to the list I gave you,
Julianne, I gotta hold you there, unfortunately. But obviously, the idea of optimism for those on the bottom rung is not high. Julianne Malveau, as always, thank you, Julianne, for deciphering those numbers for us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ed.